The last thing I want to share with you, before, and this is again the introduction, the last part of my introduction, is that when we read the Qur'an or when we try to understand the Qur'an, there are some things I want you to deconstruct in your mind. Deprogram, get them out of your system. The first of those things is, this is a book for knowledgeable people. This is a book for people that have a lot of knowledge, that are very well versed in religion, that are scholars or imams or speakers or khatibs or you name it. That's who this book is for. I want you to let this out of your mind, that when you read the Qur'an you're thinking, this book, this book is a very academic kind of exercise. Oh, it's a religious, spiritual text. I don't even want you to think about it like that first. You know what I want you to think about it like? You know when you have a real problem? A lot of us have problems. We have family problems, we have marriage problems, we have problems with our in-laws. But you say that's normal, right? So there's a problem with our in-laws. Some of you have problems with your kids. Some kids have problems with their parents. Friends have problems with each other. Some of you have problems at work. Some of you have problems in business. We have all kinds of problems. And when people have really bad problems, you know what they do? They go talk to a friend. Now, can I talk to you? This thing is really bothering me. And you call a friend and you're on the phone with them for an hour, talking about your problem. Right? This is what most of us do. And hopefully people you talk to about your problems are in your family. But for most of us, the problem is the family, so you got to find somebody else. Right? So, right? So, and this gave birth to really a gigantic scam industry, even though there are some very legitimate psychologists out there, but a lot of therapists are just crooks. They'll call you over, charge you $350 an hour and say, tell me how you feel. Tell me about your problems. And you'll talk about your problems for an hour, and at the end of that they'll say, do you feel better? I'll say, no, you're supposed to tell me something. I'm like, no. My way of getting you to feel better is to talk about your problems. But you know, when we talk to Allah about our problems, then He gives us counsel. He gives us therapy. He gives us advice. That's what the Qur'an is supposed to be. When you're having problems, when you're having, and all of us do have problems, the Qur'an is supposed to be Allah giving you and me very relevant advice for my life and your life. It's a personal relationship. It's not an academic relationship. It's not the superficial kind of relationship. First and foremost, it's a personal relationship. And when Allah is giving instructions, even when He's telling stories of the past, even when He's telling stories of the past, you're supposed to not be thinking only about the past. What should you be thinking about? Yourself. I'll give you one example of that and I'll go on. I'll give you a scary example of that. Not only should the Muslim be thinking about himself when he's listening to the Qur'an says or teaches us that even the kafir, the one who hates the message of the Qur'an, the one who disbelieves in the message of the Qur'an, when they listen to the Qur'an, even they shouldn't be thinking about the past, they should be thinking about themselves. Where did I get this from? I told you two surahs mention a lot of stories of previous prophets. Which two surahs did I highlight today? Hud and Shu'ara, right? Hud, 11 and 26. And Surah Hud once again. Very interesting phenomenon. I was actually sharing this with some brothers this morning. And later this evening at iftar. Allah decided to destroy the nation of Lut. You know that? Allah decided to destroy the nation of Lut. You know how He decided to destroy them? فَإِذَا جَاءَ أَمْرُنَا جَعَلْنَا عَالِيَهَا سَافِلَهَا. When our decision came, we decided to make their high points their low points. You know what that means? Their buildings were very high. And Allah said some kind of earthquake, tornado, hurricane, whatever He sent, but those buildings started caving in, the roofs, the ceilings started collapsing, and the buildings are falling apart because of these earthquakes that are coming on this nation. You know what happens when earthquakes happen, right? What are you supposed to do in an earthquake? You're supposed to get out of the building. Especially if it's a minor earthquake, stand underneath the doorways, right? Stand underneath the strong construction. But if it's a major earthquake, get out of the building, be outside. Allah says everything that was high was made low. Not a tree is standing, not a roof is standing, everything's destroyed. When everything's destroyed, many people get crushed. But the people who didn't get crushed, where are they now? They're outdoors. There's no roof left. This was phase one of the punishment. فَأَمْطَرْنَا عَلَيْهِمْ هِجَارَةً مِّنَ السَّمَاءِ هِجَارَةً مِّنْ سِجِّينٍ مَنْبُودٍ. He says, we started raining on them. Now you have no roof left, you have no tree left, you have no shade left. So when it's raining, do you have anywhere to go? No. What kind of rain was this? A rain made of stones. And then he adds the word manbud, which means, and I think you guys in Houston can appreciate this, you ever heard of this thing called flash floods? Right? The rain comes like a slap, like gush. And you say, okay, it's done. And then 2 seconds later, another slap, like gush. Like it falls like a bucket falls in one shot instead of light drizzles. Allah says the stones would come from the sky, one big smack. And you would think it's done. Then another layer, then another layer, then another layer. You know, I was giving the younger guys examples because they play a lot of modern warfare or whatever else. It's like brr, brr. It's like that. You know, reload and then again, reload and then again, reload and then again. It kept on coming like that. And then the next ayah tells us something even more scary. Says, musawwamatan. Musawwamatan. Every single pebble had been branded like it had the criminal's name on it. You know how in sniper fire you target very specifically? Every single bullet that Allah sent from the sky was told, this is who you're going to hit, this is where you're going to hit them. Exact targeting. First Allah brought the targets out of the houses. Because if they were still inside the house, you can't hit them. So first Allah shook the houses and got them out of the way. Now they're outdoors, now the firing begins, the firing squad begins. And at the end of all of this, you know what he says? Of course, what nation did I just tell you about? Lut, Lut. And you know who the first people listening to this was? The Quraysh are listening to this. And the Quraysh were listening to this, and to them this is old history. This is not something that happened that they saw. This is old history for them. Allah says in the same ayah, وَمَا هِيَ لِلظَّالِمِينَ بِبَعِيدٍ. Watch out. For anybody who does wrong, this isn't that far away. For anyone who does wrong, this isn't far away. Who should they be thinking about now? Themselves. Immediately. The history lesson became alive for them. You used to be a party animal yesterday. This Ramadan, you turn back to Allah and you've discovered Islam. And all of a sudden you want to become the preacher in your family and tell everybody that they're wrong and that they're doing haram. Before you do, you need to get a little credibility, don't you? Before you open your mouth, before you start yelling at your uncles, right? Before you start teaching, giving them the khutbah, you come in here the khutbah and you say, I'm going to do this at home. That's a good point. My dad needs to hear this one. This is going to make a great point of argument, right? A lot of excited young people do that. They discover the religion, they hold on to it, and they use it to debate with family. Right? When you do that, you're basically abandoning what the messengers did. You have to have a little credibility first. When you turn to the religion, you become the best son, the best daughter, the best husband, the best wife. Speaking of the best husband, I want to tell you a story. A really good one on this subject. Making people conscious of Allah. You don't just invite people to have taqwa of Allah with your words. Your character says a lot. A friend of mine, he became a friend actually on a short trip, told me about how he was raised in a Muslim family. He's Guyanese origin, and in Guyana there's Muslims that are committed, and there's Muslims that have mixed their religion with Hinduism, and some Muslims that are just Muslim by name, and they've completely almost lost everything of the religion. They almost know nothing of the religion. And he was of the latter type. He almost knew nothing about the religion. So as he was growing up in New York, he almost completely just wasn't even practically Muslim. He used to, you know, get into fights with his mother, he went to jail a couple of times, he was in gangs, all kinds of stuff. Later on in life he decides he wants to, you know, he's looking for God. And he knows at least by name he's Muslim. I think his name was Muhammad or something, right? By name he's Muslim, so he should look into what religion first? Islam. So he starts looking into Islam, starts going to the masjid, starts learning how to pray again, becomes more serious. At the time he was, you know, he had married his girlfriend who was Christian or whatever. And he starts becoming more serious about the religion. And then his wife notices that he's praying. And the beer is gone from the fridge. And he's not going out with his drinking buddies. And he doesn't go to Atlantic City on the weekends. He's a different guy. Something's changed, you know. And he doesn't say anything to her. He, just on his own, he didn't yell at her, didn't tell her to, you know, put a hijab on or whatever. lose all her friends. He didn't do any of that. He went to a scholar, and I make dua for the scholar that he went to. He didn't tell me his name, but he said, I went to my scholar, and I told him, look, I'm becoming more and more aware of Islam, but my wife, of course, is a Christian, and she's not even a practicing Christian. She's just kind of what I was before. She's exactly like I was before. How do I help her? He said, don't tell her a thing about Islam, just be the best husband you can be, and to do that, just study what kind of a husband the Prophet was. Just do that. Don't worry about what you need to tell her. Worry about being the best possible husband, and that is the sunnah of the Messenger. The Messenger would buy his wife gifts. The Messenger would joke with his wife. The Messenger would spend time with the mother of the believers. The Messenger would praise and compliment the mother of the believers. I'm mentioning that on purpose, guys. He would compliment them. You guys eat the first morsel of food in iftar, you're like, And the wife says, what? You go, nothing. Right? You drink some of the desis here drink the first little sip of lassi. Look, I know the economy's bad, but are we really that short on sugar? Or, you know? Very painful for you to say a compliment. I understand, especially for those of you that come from my original country, Pakistan. For you to give a compliment to your wife can cause an ulcer. So I understand, but it's a sunnah, guys. Good food. That's amazing. You know, and the sisters are so used to hearing nasty things from us. Then when we say nice things, they get freaked out. Like if the husband just says, you look really nice today. She goes, what do you want? like she gets worried, like he's up to, you know. We gotta fix that. That's a problem. It can't be healthy. So he starts doing these things with his wife. And in the beginning he used to argue with her sometimes about Islam. And tell her how Christianity doesn't make sense. How can three be one and one be three? All those kinds of arguments, you've heard them before, right? And none of those would work with his wife. None of them. He's like, no. I'm a Christian and that's it. Jesus is in my heart. Leave me alone. 3 years go by, he stops talking to her about Christianity and how dumb it is or whatever. Stops debating with her. He's just being what he can be as the best husband. And one day he's making Maghrib and his wife joins him in Salat. And he's in Salat. It messes up his Salat. Right? What's happening here? Right? Yeah.
Can we have a break for after 5 minutes?
Yeah, we can give a break in 5 minutes, sure.
For 10 minutes, we can get home.
Sure. So, he gives, you know, he after Salat, he looks at her and he goes, what happened? And she goes, what? Nothing. And he goes, no, you have to tell me what happened. And of course she says what pretty much any wife would say, it's complicated. Right? But eventually she tells him, and she tells him, look, I've never seen a husband like you. My dad wasn't like that. I've never seen a father like you. The way you are with our child, I've never seen a father be like that. It's so beautiful. This religion can't be wrong. It can't be wrong. This is ittaqullah. You see how aware you are of Allah in your life. Right? It's not how many ayat you've memorized, how many ahadith you know, how much knowledge you can spit out at someone, how many quotes from scholars you can deliver. It's not about that. It's how are you living your life? People can see that. You're calling people to the taqwa of Allah. حَقَّ تُقَاتِهِ وَلَا تَمُوتُنَّ إِلَّا وَأَنْتُمْ مُسْلِمُونَ. And that's the next part. In 5 minutes I have to give you a break because some people have to get their cars and park them like they would at work. Right? But what I want to share with you in these last 5 minutes is وَلَا تَمُوتُنَّ إِلَّا وَأَنْتُمْ مُسْلِمُونَ. This is item number one. There were three items, right? This is the first item. Don't you dare die except that you're Muslim. You know, one of the most important things we have to do as families is we have to talk about death. As families. Not in speeches, not in khutbahs. As families. Not if I die, when I die. People say, if I die, do this, this, this. No. When I die, do this, this, this. When I die, make sure you, please make dua for me. Even to young, you know, like teenage kids, early, when they're just getting their consciousness, make them aware of death. If there's an opportunity to go to a janazah, take your family. Take your kids especially. Let them see a janazah. Let them see the burial. I know about the sunnah about the women. But other than that, I'm talking about just actually being aware of death. And the best way to be aware of death, and to be aware of our mortality also, is that we have to take our children out of their comfort zones. I'm telling you, wallahi, wallahi, even the ones of us that are not doing that well in this country, that have minimal, you know, jobs, and are barely getting by in their apartments, we're still living like kings compared to people in the rest of the world. Our children have a lot of luxury. Even those of you that are living in small apartments, you open the fridge and there's four different kinds of soda, and three different kinds of juice. And there are people that haven't had clean water for weeks. Right? We have a lot of luxury. And our children are used to it. We're used to it. We have to take ourselves out of that sometimes. We have to take ourselves out of that. Even for a little bit. Even for a little bit. To put life in perspective again. And that's really important. Because when our children just become, and we just become accustomed to luxury all the time, and we start getting used to it, we forget what we really are. What we really are is dirt. Allah created us from it. And we'll go back to it. That's all we really are. And a human being forgets that. Right? The higher up he goes, he forgets where he came from. We have to remember where we came from. This is the first agenda. I haven't even talked to you about the laws of Islam and prayer and hijab and beard and this. And none of that stuff. All I'm talking about is just be aware of Allah, man. Just be aware of Allah. Be aware that you're going to die. That your life has a purpose. And you're conscious of Allah now, so He can take care of you later. You forget about Allah in this world, He'll have you forgotten in the afterlife. After you die, what are you going to do? A disbeliever can deny the Akhirah. A disbeliever can say there's no coming to life after death. But even a disbeliever cannot deny death itself. Death is a reality. That's going to come. If there's one thing that we, you know, makes us, you know, worry, I actually love Ramadan for that reason. How much time left? A couple of weeks, right? How fast did that go by? How fast? That's your entire life is going to be like that. My entire life is going to be like that. Ramadan, you know how fast it went by? That's how fast life goes by. It's a good training on how, you know how we say, only a couple of weeks left, I got to do this. At least those of you that care. I got to pray more, I got to finish Quran, I got to do this, I got to do that. I have a little bit of time left. If you can develop that attitude in Ramadan, you should transfer that attitude to the rest of your life. I only have a little bit of time left. I got to get some stuff done. I got to put this investment in place. So once I'm gone, I keep getting the credit. The sadaqah jariyah, I keep getting it. From my children, from what I taught, from what I help people with, from things good things I did in this world. This is our first campaign. For our families before anybody else. And worry about family before you worry about anybody else. If we can do that inshaAllah ta'ala, we're going to be ready for the next phase of this campaign that will create this beautiful society that Allah wants us to become.